Hello, and welcome to You Should See the Other Guy, the podcast where we watch a romantic movie featuring a choice between suitors and tell you why the person who does the picking did so poorly. I'm Jennifer.
I am Samantha.
And I am Sadie. And if you are wondering why I sound weird, it's because I am actively fighting for my life with the flu. So stay safe out there, kiddos, because even if you get your flu shot, it'll get you. It'll get you.
Wow. Sadie sounds weird always.
Hey.
Just for the record.
I think that the weird thing
you
was the cheerful tone
while I'm down?
About the flu.
The flu. I have a little baby flu.
I have the flu.
You sound like one of the ceramic garden gnomes in the James McAvoy, Romeo and Juliet movie deep cut for this podcast.
Honestly, that was the best movie we've ever done on this podcast.
We should do a round two of that movie just for the hell of it.
Aren't there like seven
Let's
of the Gnomeverse, the Gnomeverse? I'm ready to devote March of next year to doing the Gnomeverse.
March Madness is in that we just go mad from watching so many Romeo and Juliet movies.
Oh my God. Well, today we are talking about the 2019 rom-com, Can You Keep a Secret, starring White Lotus Season 1 girl and a guy from Road to Perdition. And Laverne Cox shows up, and so does the curly-haired guy from 30 Rock at some point. If you want to know names, go look them up. I'm not a computer. I think the girl's name is like Alex Daddario.
Yeah, Daddario.
It's Alexandra Daddario and Tyler Hoechlin, My Love, My Life from Teen Wolf.
Oh.
We're talking about more.
There's more important casting news to come, but we'll do the summary first and get into that here in a minute.
This was a Nora suggestion from listener Rami the Void Heartleaf. And was this a Netflix original or a VOD? I think it may have been straight to VOD and then showed up on streaming platforms. I'm not sure.
Let me get the Wikipedia page out.
It has the feeling of we didn't have a lot of money, which, you know, I have a hard time blaming a movie for.
Okay, here we go.
Oh my God. This was actually based off of a book from 2003.
Yes. It explained
so
much.
By the same person who wrote Confessions of a Shopaholic, which is, I hate to say it, a great series.
That's the one that they made the movies with Isla Fisher about, right?
Yes.
So basically, White Lotus girl, her name is Emma. She works at like Panda. It's basically kind of like Red Bull, but like organic, and they also make food products. But you know what I like that they captured, and I learned this recently about Red Bull, is that like Red Bull is, they're not a beverage maker, they're a marketing company. Did you know that? They just like license the formula out to bottlers.
What? Wow.
They're not like, you know, Pepsi or Coke, where they're actually in the business of like putting it in the bottles and distributing it. They are just like, they have marketed the brand and license out the, you know, energy slop to everybody. Anyway, point being, she's like, you know, in like marketing for an energy food and beverage company. And she's on a plane home from a disastrous work presentation when the plane hits a bit of turbulence and she's accidentally seated in first class next to someone she doesn't know. And she starts spilling all of her honestly not that embarrassing secrets to her seatmate. And then she gets back to work. Yeah.
It was all pretty cool there until the part about weeping to that Imagine Dragons song.
Honestly, yeah, maybe the most humiliating one, but I don't know. We can talk about secrets later. So she gets back to work.
They were not real secrets. I'm sorry. That was very like not manic pixie dream girl, but it's kind of like a fun and quirky version of Secret. It's like, give me the gritty shit. Give me like I eat dirt. You know what I mean? Like, give me like real hardcore Secret.
Confess to a cannibalism fantasy, you know? Yeah. Like, she's like, I'm worried I'll die without ever like eating a toe with somebody. But yeah, it very much reads in that rom-com way of like, my secret is I have a personality. and meanwhile, his secret, which we'll get to later, is like, I'm a good person. Very like Mr. Darcy there for his dark secret to be that he's like, you know, engaged in charity for a child.
Anyway, still have questions about that. Carry on.
She gets back to work. Her immediate manager, Laverne Cox, is mad at her about how things went in Chicago and is like, better buckle up, Missy, because our CEO, Jack Harper, and by the way, his co-founder died and it was very sad, but our CEO, Jack Harper, is coming to visit the office. And lo and behold, Jack Harper is the anonymous man she sat next to on the plane. Also, Emma has a boyfriend who's definitely gay, whose name is Connor.
He like treats her like a little doll, doesn't he? They're kind of cute together in their way.
And in case you missed it, he has a hairy ass. the amount of shots that they got of his ass.
Yeah, was really concerned with ass shots on Connor. And he was just living his life. I mean, who can blame him? Who puts on pants to get out of bed? Like, anyway.
Yeah. I don't mean to stereotype broadly by calling him gay, but I felt like the performer was playing him very gay. I don't know.
Yeah.
It
almost felt insulting. Like, I was like, somehow this is like homophobic, and he's in no way like supposed to be coded as gay, I think. But it was still like, this is wrong, I feel.
It was strange. Anyway, she like breaks up with him. And it's kind of an eventful day. Wasn't this all over a day? Like, she breaks up with her boyfriend and agrees to go out with Jack Harper and then goes to dinner with Jack Harper and they, like, love each other.
Yeah, and then she finds out that two of his toes are fused together, and then they have a lot of sex, and there's some interludes with her roommates. And what is the reason they originally break up?
Because he, on a TV interview, cites her as inspiration for marketing to women,
yes,
but in a way that outs her as his secret girlfriend to her entire office.
Yeah. In one of those grueling morning show interviews for CEOs where they do no prep to talk about product.
Yeah, instead, they have no talking points. They can do just like 2-minute monologues without being interrupted for any commercial breaks or anything. You know,
it's just live.
A nice casual podcasting atmosphere on national television.
But yeah, she could have lived with most of the rest of it, but he sold her out about the Imagine Dragons song, and he told the world that she has insecurities. Not what the insecurities are, just that she has them. But it was like an unutterable betrayal, so that's why she's mad. And then that's where the roommates come in, because the one devious roommate wants her to sell out his secrets to a tabloid in revenge.
Yeah, and the only secret she knows about him is that he has taken a flight to Chicago one time in his life.
A very unusual thing for CEOs who are based in New York City to do.
And she gives up on that because they like romantically reunite. But then the reporter, Judah Friedlander, shows up and is like, so tell me about the Chicago trip. And Jack sees and he's like, I'm so mad I could fly to Chicago. And Emma, who, by the way, got a promotion at work because she girl bossed her way into feeding panda bites to old people. I hate that sentence means something in my brain. She goes on the plane and gives her speech, and they sit down, and he starts telling her his secrets. And that's can you keep a secret?
We did leave out
the answer is no.
The most important scene.
They can't.
Which was her lawyer roommate performing a beautiful interpretive dance with Britney Spears' husband. That was the site of the reunion between Jack and Emma. And the dog, who was really cute, and whose name apparently is also Toots in real life.
What was the point of the dog? Like, I'm sorry, I can't...
Yeah.
I know that that's a really small thing. I also need to note that I watched this with like way too much NyQuil coursing through my veins. And I didn't have as many plot holes as I thought it did. Cause I was like, not necessarily, maybe not plot holes, but I was like, why would a person like care about this or like know about, like, you know what I mean? Like when he mentions, cause like his big secret, right, is like that his ex CEO has a daughter. Yeah. And like it lives in Chicago and like that's it. And like no one needs to know about it and like he has to be really secret. I'm like, you own like Red Bull, basically. Like what, like if you gun to my head asked me to name the CEO of Red Bull, I would say shoot me. Like I have no idea. Like, why does everyone in this universe care what the fuck this man does in his spare time?
In this universe, this man is interviewed on TV by, like, Diane Sawyer about his new employee girlfriend. And people apparently, I suppose, would care about the daughter figure. I don't know. I kind of, just coming off of White Lotus season 2, I interpreted this to be, like, chronological. Like, this is the history of the White Lotus season 1 character, Rachel, that Alexander Daddario plays. I think that this happened probably 7 months to a year before her time at the White Lotus. I think that the CEO, Jack, is nefarious. And I think that that's just a weird, the situation with the little girl who must be kept a secret at all costs and ask no questions about it. And I think that that relationship probably didn't last long term. But I think that this is how
I forgot to say that in my summary. Whatever his name is, his Chicago secret is that he's caring for the late daughter of his co-founder.
He's not even caring for her. He just visited her. Like... I was so disappointed by what the actual secret was. Like, I understand that the whole point is that the stakes are really low, but I'm so curious as to how this was a book. So like, I feel like they had to have moved things around and like lowered the stakes because I'm like 300 pages of that. I don't know.
Sadie, it explained everything to me. When I finished watching this movie yesterday, I pulled up the Wikipedia page and I found out that it was a book from 2003. I also looked at that Wikipedia page. It was a British book from 2003. So that explained to me so many of the kind of anachronistic things in this movie that was that came out in 2019 is like stuff that carried through from the 2003. Some of the tropes and the jokes that seemed shocking for, you know, like some of this, I was like, really? 2019? Like, I don't know where the way that they kept showing Connor's butt, like obviously as a joke the whole time. It strikes me as something that would be much more comfortable in a Bridget Jones movie, like one of the original Bridget Jones run, you know?
That's fair.
And so
and I feel like a lot of the Connor comedy.
Yes.
Felt very British to me.
The whole workplace setting where she's choosing between dating, you know, coworkers and bosses, like that, yeah, also struck me as kind of in the vein of Bridget Jones. I think that it's just stuff that was more acceptable tropes at that time period that, you know, you might have expected in a rom-com more so than now. Where, like, from 2022 eyes watching, it's like, isn't this like a conflict of interest? Like, isn't this ethically problematic? Like, she can't date the CEO of her company who's like cutting her checks. And that's even before you get to the secret daughter. But yeah, that explained a lot to me. So apparently they released the book first in England, and then they like transposed it to do a United States version separately of the book here, where they made some changes and added stuff. And so then I guess that's what this movie is based off of. And yeah, so it's kind of just a strange object where it's like a text taken from 20 years ago and like the time capsule was reopened and the movie was made, but it gives it this sort of weird, I can see where it's more of like what I would think of as a classic rom-com in some ways than a lot of the Netflix rom-coms. But
yeah,
it's strange because it's like, yeah, 2003, you know, romance novel filtered through 2019. And it's sort of like, yeah, alien observations of human customs. And
here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely belongs in like the Bridget Jones era, I think.
Yeah. Here is how they fix this. Okay. First of all, they expand the timeline significantly so that they are spending like at least 6 months in each other's company before they even start dating. Okay. So expanding the timeline out. That's number one. Number two, have her secrets be real. Like have them, like the dreams by Imagine Dragons, that relatable. More of that. More of that. Number yeah. three.
If you're going to get cringe, let's go all the way. Like no yes. accidental, like.
And also that is, if you listen to the lyrics, that is a heartfelt song. And I understand where she's coming from. And number three, the way that they talked about Pete, the dead CEO, and like all this weird buildup, I knew that it wasn't going to happen, but it also made so much sense to me. Like, I was like, oh yeah, like Jack is bi and like they were in a relationship. Like, yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking. Like, I was like, this just, like, I get that, like, obviously you can be very upset if your best friend dies, like, obviously, but it just felt like I really thought.
That was like recently widowed.
He started talking about the
cinematic
daughter.
Behavior.
Yeah. Yes. Like I was like, have them have been in a relationship together and like Pete had a daughter and now like he is raising her, like as like her stepdad kind of thing. Like, why was that not, or so, I don't know, something more higher stakes. Like he was just like, yeah, my friend had a daughter and like we're trying to keep her out of the spotlight. I'm like, she is the child of a CEO of like a Red Bull energy drink company who has passed away. Like, she is not like Angelina Jolie. Like, I don't understand. Like, she is like not, I don't know, but it just felt so palpable that like there was something, I was just waiting for there to be more between him and Pete. Like, maybe not that they were like lovers, but there was something there. Like, either that like Pete like committed suicide, or like Pete like embezzled from the company, or he, I don't know, something like wackadoodle.
Or Pete
like
had a daughter with no birth records whatsoever who doesn't officially exist.
Yeah. Like a secret government operative.
Yeah.
Born in a lab.
Yes.
I think
the Panda product line, they're going to start a new product. Peter, he goes, like, I don't know. They're testing it on this
panda
super
for
human
spies.
Child.
Panda for child spies.
There's something going on here.
I think my issue with the movie is, one, I think Alexandra Daddario is very fun to watch. She's got a nice screwball energy. And I think with like, I think she was easy enough to watch in this movie. I think like a lot of this movie's problems are symptomatic of the era it was released in, which is namely that there is like no budget. And so it can't really establish that the world is like real, you know, like uh-huh. what they have access to is like, five desks and one floor of an office, or a studio made to look like one floor of an office, and like a green screen, you know? And so it sort of like narrows their possibilities, where like 20 years ago, you could make a movie like this with more extras and more bells and whistles and really establish like, hey, this Jack Harper guy, he's a revered marketing genius. Here's our shot of people at a newsstand and reading magazines with his face on the cover. Oh my God, he's so big, you know? Like, as it stands, it feels a little like school play in that way that, like, a lot of, like, movies these days of this scale feel like a school play, where you're like, well, I'll believe you that this is one of the most important men in the world, even though he's, like, you know, in an office that just looks like a nice Pier 1 Imports, you know?
Yes. You know, that's such a good point, Samantha. And I think that it adds to the already kind of unreal effect from I think that's part of what I'm trying to get at, comparing it to the, you know, thinking about the book form of this too. Actually, one of the cooler things about this movie was the intro, where it gave us like a full songs and credits worth of cool little animation that looked like the covers of those types of romance novels that like showed the little story of her adopting the dog. And that was cool, I thought. But I've been on a little stretch over the autumn. I reread some old romance novels from the 2010s and then like stretching back into the 2010s. And you can really see development of like more contemporary romances tend to try to set themselves in a more believable world like that, I guess. They up the mental budget in the book. And when you go back further in history, sort of reading them, it was a little bit more, you know, it was a little more bare bones setups that like, you know, I think that the combination, yeah, it's kind of mentally, it visually, this movie manifested sort of, I think that the way a novel of the amount of detail that is included here would feel to read.
Yeah. I mean, and it does feel like an adaptation that makes sense now that we know it, because it does have these little details that it's like trying to fit in there. Of like the dog adoption thing, the coworkers dance story.
Yes, the coworkers dance story. That is some. I do appreciate that this one was a romance novel where the surrounding cast is friends instead of that. Always kind of creeps me out in romance books where they have like siblings be the close confidants about their siblings' like sexual escapades. Let's not do that. So this time, at least it was the roommates. But yes, in what world are these lawyers in New York meeting to secretly practice interpretive dance? I honestly don't care.
I feel like that was my favorite part
of the movie. Both of the roommates, I was staring at them like, I know both of them. What are they? I had to pull out the little IMDb page and look up. Glow. And so I knew the bitchy one who clearly like owned the place and other two like paid her rent or whatever, who had bad ideas about tabloid revenge. I remembered her from Orange is the New Black. She was so-so, I think, starting on like season two. And then the roommate, Lissy, the dancing lawyer, I knew her face. It is because she is the girl who cocks her butt like a shotgun and then breaks through the floors of the building in the DJ Snake and Little John Turned Down for What video. And she performs an amazing interpretive dance with Britney Spears' literal husband. Like, that's...
She's also...
Wow.
She's art. Also a lesbian in Glow, one of the greatest series of all time.
Magnificent. Yeah. Like, I would watch a spinoff about that roommate.
Is the roommate our other guy? Because I don't support Connor as the other guy in this scenario.
Yeah, absolutely
not. No. Connor needs to be free.
I mean, the sex dream didn't come out of nowhere. I will say that. One other question that I had is, like, at the beginning, what is the main girl's name?
Emma Corrigan, junior marketing associate of Panda Enterprises. I added the enterprises. That's not real.
Emma, she mentions, right, that she's not really happy in her job. And so I thought that at the end, or at least halfway through, she would quit and like find her dream job, which would then make it much more chill to be dating him. because she's no longer his like subordinate. But good then she point. Just kind of gets a raise. And I'm like, but you don't like this company at all. Like all these people are mean to you. Like this doesn't feel like a happy ending.
Again, that's very Bridget Jonesy, isn't it? Like she just carries on yeah. in this kind of shitty, mediocre job. And the girl boss moment was really strange because it was like, I mean,
I feel like she would get fired in real life.
Yeah. For like not letting that guy take your credit, but for like suddenly insisting in front of the full team that you deserve a promotion and a raise because you happen to mention an idea to a guy who did the actual work of placing the ads was a little strange. But Laverne Cox did an absolutely heroic job of selling that, actually, her scene with it afterwards. I was wondering if that was actually scripted or if that came from Laverne Cox. When she asks Emma about her relationship with the CEO, Jack, and she's like, look, I just want you to know, like, if you ever felt pressured or like, let me do something to help you, like sort of like she was the only one who touched on the ethics of that in any way. But then she had to give Emma a hug and then exit. But Laverne Cox was a delight and a jewel of this movie.
They also just kind of had too many other coworkers. I don't know.
Oh, like, yeah, the one who had the secret show. Amelie,
time, like, this movie?
St. Vincent, who thinks she's French. What was her name? And did she serve any narrative purpose?
Alyssa. She was just kind of a bitchy minor antagonist.
Artemis.
And then
she laughed
also
at her
had,
for not reading Great Expectations.
In addition to her best friend, like, another office, or in addition to her boyfriend, like, a best friend who also worked there. The one she had, like, the little code with to go get coffee in the break room, which, like,
yeah,
you really need to get out of that job if you need a secret code to say, let's go to the break room for 10 minutes. Like, you're allowed to take breaks at work, people.
Yeah, he got his moment to kind of say something sassy to Jack about being a betrayer. But then again, that scene was a little strange to me because he tells the guy he was being a shithead, but then suddenly he remembers, oh, and you're my boss, and gets all deferent again, but then walks away so that the boss can have a conversation about his sexual relationship with his other employee who is in the same position.
Yeah.
You know, this is a personal, this is, a, I can't like broadly, objectively, you know, but in romance novels, I can cope with very sketchy setups more easily if it's just a straight up smut book and the purpose is to put these people in a situation to create erotic friction or whatever. But for my personal taste, I always get a little bit put off by the Bridget Jones style ones where there's office shenanigans and such that would be absolutely incomprehensibly appalling in real life for that to make its way into an ideal romance. So
do we find him interesting and attractive? Sometimes when actors are just like, I don't know, they look too much like magazine models, it's like, what's the point, you know?
That's another romance novel problem, is making the men too boring to make them be just sort of like an ideal post for the imperfect heroine to, I don't learn life lessons around and on like a vine.
I have things to say. I think that Tyler Hoechlin is very hot in that he does look very like cut and clean handsome. However, I think that he is a really good actor. He is, if he was fantastic in Teen Wolf. as
what
one
role
of the titular
did he play?
Oh. Teen Wolves. He was Derek. He was one of the werewolves. And he also was like part of that really popular Steric ship.
Steric?
And yeah,
it was
Steric.
The
it was between it was between him and Styles, who was played by oh my god, what's his name? I'm drawing a blank. I know the answer to this. Dylan O'Brien.
The one from that Taylor Swift video who played Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Got it.
So he's like one of the alphas. Derek is in Teen Wolf, and he's kind of a very like
Teen
staunch.
Wolf is like that homoerotic real.
Yes.
I was to say, yes. I'm having an awakening about the appeal of Teen Wolf. I've never seen it.
He's really good.
These are like locker room shenanigans with werewolves trying to out alpha each other. Is that what's happening in Teen Wolf?
I mean, that's kind of how it starts a little bit. Because one of them, the main guy, Scott, he gets bitten and becomes a werewolf. And then he just kind of like gets forced into this like werewolf lifestyle. And Derek, who's like been a werewolf his entire life, like is like a pedigreed one. He initially like really hates Scott and they kind of like get into a lot of arguments. And then Scott's best friend, who is a human, his name is Styles. And the sexual tension off the charts between Styles and Derek. What was I going to say? Very hot in that show. And also he's currently playing Superman in a few shows. He plays Superman in Supergirl and also in Superman versus, I keep saying this, Superman and Lois. And he's a very good Superman also. And he's been in a few other things, but he's very good. And Hannah actually pointed something out to me when we were watching this movie yesterday, is that his teeth are very specific looking. Like they look kind of like the American Girl teeth. Like they're just kind of like little like bunny teeth.
I think he could play a vampire really well. I'll just say that on the teeth angle.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
I think he is one of the few people that I think can fit into both the werewolf and vampire categories very seamlessly. And I can't remember the specifics. There might have been a point where he became a vampire in Teen Wolf. I can't remember. I should do a rewatch.
Like a double wolf vampire.
That show went wild, Teen Wolf. And I
How would you arrange the qualifiers in that case? Are you a Teen Wolf vampire or are you a vampire Teen Wolf?
You're a Teen Wolf vampire.
Okay. Thank you.
Teen Wolf becomes first.
Bring that up for me.
Comes first. Always. I thought that he was very, like, I think that this role could have been very creepy in this movie, and I think that he played it off very well. So I think he was fighting an uphill battle in the whole, like, boss, who also, like, is being very weird about these secrets and, like, does kind of speak about them and, like, also asks her out kind of thing. Like, it could have been very creepy, but I don't think that it came off that way.
He did
because
now
he had a very specific
it,
way of playing it.
I will give him some props for that. He did a good job of coming across as shy rather than distant in a lot of their interactions, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like I feel, yeah, you're right. That role could have been much less appealing now that I think about it. Like, wow, it could have been really bad. They could have gone full Gerard Butler. I mean, they probably wouldn't because the Ugly Truth character was very different
God,
from this guy.
Oh, God, Gerard Butler. You know that if this movie had been made in 2009, Gerard Butler would have been Jack Harper.
It would have been Gerard Butler with like, yeah, they would have made his hair blonder, I feel like.
I've been seeing a lot in theaters lately, and I have seen this trailer like 7 times now of like, Gerard Butler is a commercial airplane pilot, and the plane goes down in a war-torn nation. He's an ex-Marine
Gerard
or something,
Butler.
And he's going to get back all the passengers from, like, the local drug lord or something like that. And it's like...
Oh, God.
I feel like he's specializing in this, like conservative dad wish fulfillment fantasy stuff. Like, with the Has Fallen franchise, which I, like, watched on an airplane once, where it's just like, oh, I'm just an old guy, like, in the middle of my career, but I can still save the fucking president if I want to. Like, I still got it. It's funny. But in real life, we know from, like, you know, that these types of people just, like, crumble. There's this moment in the trailer where, like, you know, his friend is like, you need to get back to your family. And referring to the passengers of the plane, Gerard Butler is like, what about their families? And it's like, you wouldn't give a shit. You would just be hightailing it out of there. You wouldn't go Rambo to save, like, your airline cattle, you know? I don't know. There's my aside, my Gerard Butler aside.
Like, Gerard Butler is like 53. Like, I feel like he had really cool movies that he was in. Like, what am I thinking of? Wasn't he in Reign of Fire? That was a great movie.
Christian Bale was in that one. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but he was also in it.
He was like, I remember. I'm starting to. Wow.
One of the greatest movies of all time, Reign of Fire. You remember it?
He was in Matthew McConaughey. Oh, it's coming back to me.
I feel like he was in really cool stuff. And then now he's just in, like, you know, like fuck me four. I'm like Taken 17. And it's like, oh my God. Like, please get back to what you were doing before this. Or it's like, London has been destroyed.
Bad news, Gerard. They've destroyed another world capital city. Oh, not again.
Boise has fallen.
Yeah, they just have to keep working down.
I'm ready for Gerard Butler to star in Boise Has Fallen.
Sadie, that NyQuil is giving you some genius ideas.
Kansas City has gone kaput.
Dream movie marathon. Kansas City has gone kaput. Boise has fallen. And fuck me for.
Ocean City, Maryland is over. Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
What were we talking about?
I don't know.
I think we were, positively comparing Teen Wolf Guy's performance in this. We were thinking about how much worse it would have been if this movie had actually been made in 2003 versus 2019.
Yeah. It just needs more money. That's my review. I can't rate it because I just think it needs more money. And speaking of more money, this is my only opportunity to tell you both that I saw Avatar last night. It was...
Way of Water?
I saw, indeed, The Way of the Water was consumed by my eyeballs. I honestly loved it. I was not a fan of Avatar 1.
Oh.
Like, Avatar 1 felt a little too, like, wish fulfillment empowerment fantasy. Like, I wasn't interested in this dude being like, wow, look how strong I am. It's so cool that I can fly. Like, I kind of hate in the Harry Potter movies when it's just the kids being like, wow, look how pretty this is. Wow, it's magic. And Avatar 1 had, like, too much of Jake Sully doing that. But in number 2, with all that out of the way.
Let's get to the real shit.
Yeah. It's just like, here's the fucking whales, guys. Like, this is what I wanted to show you the whole time. And I'm like, James, I'm in. Show me more of the whales and their ways.
I'm fascinated by James Cameron's mind that he needs this narrative framework to be able to show us the whales that he wants us to see.
Yeah, it's like he had to evolve all of us into Na'vi so that we could live in his world.
I am so excited to see this now. This reminds me of a quote that I saw on Twitter, and it was from GQ magazine, and Hannah can attest, I was like sobbing on the couch when I read this. And maybe I was just delusional, but we'll see if I can actually get through the quote without breaking down laughing. It says, James Cameron says the ideas for Avatar originally came to him in a dream, quote unquote. I have my own private streaming service that's better than any of that shit out there. And it runs every night for free.
Oh my God.
And it's his dreams.
Inspirational.
And it runs every night for free.
He's truly, like, off the chain in his energy in interviews recently, or maybe I'm only just now paying attention. Like, someone asked him when you should go to the bathroom during Avatar, and he was like, whenever. You can go to the bathroom a different time when you see it again. And then, in another interview, he was talking about some executive who was like, casting doubt on Avatar before its release, the first one. And he told the executive, like, he was like, this movie won't just make some money, it will make all of the money. And if you don't support it now, you're going to be embarrassed after that happens. The time to support Avatar is today. Just like dressed this guy down.
He is he was so confident. Like, he was like, this is like, the time is now. Like, what has it been? It's been like over a decade, I feel, since the last Avatar movie. And now he's like, no, this is hitting right when it needs to hit.
He knows.
I'm so excited to see Avatar The Way of Water.
Huh. You know, I feel like Alexandra Daddario could have played a good Na'vi. Like, she has kind of like giant blue with eyeballs those already.
Yeah. That's Pandora Blue, baby.
When are you going to see it?
Well, has it come to Missouri yet? Let me check my Regal Unlimited app. I've become delirious.
I saw it in Dolby 3D, which my Avatar head brother decided was the best format to see it in. And I managed to go 3 hours without taking a pee break, and I was very happy.
Yeah.
Expert timing.
Does James Cameron say that you don't have to go back and see it in theaters again now because you passed the
James
test
Cameron
on go?
Has freed me. I'll probably go back just to watch the whales. The whales are really cool in it.
Would you recommend the 3D experience for the whales?
Oh, the 3D is great. I wouldn't see it not in 3D unless you had no other choice. Doesn't matter if it's Dolby, regular, IMAX. Get those glasses on your face, I say. The disappointing news I have to report is that the Barbie trailer was not in 3D, despite other trailers being in 3D.
Damn it.
And
that would have been Nicole Kidman would not have allowed it.
I was really actually crushed by that. And the Nicole Kidman AMC pre-roll ad was also not in three dimensions, which
God,
I was hoping for.
Well, do we rate this movie? Speaking of Avatar 2, The Way of Water.
Samantha rates Can You Keep a Secret needs more money. Samantha
needs
rates
more money.
Yeah.
Avatar
needs
The Way
more
of
money
Water
out of five.
Has
exactly
enough money.
The right amount of money. Yeah. Yes.
Not a dollar too much.
Yeah, I feel similarly that I would feel badly giving the movie a low rating because, you know, it would feel kind of like kicking it when it's, you know, yeah, it in some ways it just didn't have the budget to stand up to, you know, what it could have been. And that makes it difficult to rate. But I do think that if you're in the mood for something that strikes you as a classic, like as a Bridget Jones type rom-com, and, you know, you weren't going to be sensitive to some of the more 2003 humor beats where they sort of mock people's physicality. There are some weird and amazing things that the lawyer dance scene, fantastic. The dog, was she necessary strictly? No. But was it amazing that she was there? Yes. I am glad that you graced my TV screen, Toots. So yeah, go in with, you know, well, and also I think it's a kind of a fascinating historical artifact because of, you know, like we discussed where it was picked up from 2003, the material, and then released in 2019, immediately before the pandemic. And honestly, I guess before Alexandra Daddario's big breakout with White Lotus 1, because that was filmed in 2020. I wonder how Teen Wolf Guy is doing now since this. We know that Omar, the dancing lawyer, got married to Britney Spears in the intervening time.
Oh.
Anyway, a fascinating cultural mismatch taking place in this movie. And I would recommend it for that reason if you are bored and feel so inclined.
I will give it 3 dead co-CEO lovers out of 5.
three peats stacked on top of each other.
Like, if I thought it was one, I agree with Samantha that, like, if I think about the potential of what it could have been if it had had, like, a Bridget Jones Diary type of budget and, like, a little bit more time to grow, like, I think that it could have been really, really good. Like, it could have been up there with Confessions of a Shopaholic also, which I do consider to be a really good adaptation of one of Sophie Kinsella's novels. But because of the budget constraints and all of that, it didn't really hit quite as much as I had wanted it to. And I felt like there were some issues with kind of how to adapt the novel into a movie, which is why it definitely made sense after, you know, learning that it wasn't a book. It made sense to me. But I thought that both of the leads had really good chemistry. I really love Tyler Hoechlin. I really enjoy seeing Miss Daddario on my screen. She is fantastic. Also, I love seeing Laverne Cox. So yeah, I enjoy it. I mean, I would throw it on again just to have in the background. But yeah, that's the run and short of it. Or if I'm like dying, you know, the next time I'm dying from the flu, I might toss it on.
Jen, what would you say to listeners who were wondering whether this was the most monumental event in human history that we promised on the last episode?
Samantha, I would say to our dear listeners that they need to continue being patient because we have not reached the most monumental event in human history just yet, but it is coming up. And in the meantime, you can find us. Are we still on Twitter, Sadie?
We are. Samantha. You know, we've
until we post Elon Musk's real-time location. SSTOG will be on Twitter.
Yeah, we're off and on now just because of the horrors of Mr. Musk, but we're still very much online.
And that is at YSSTOG. And you can also find us at our patreon.com/YSSTOG, where we are doing a little bit of finessing to work out rewards and tiers for the coming year. And I think our basic tier of $3 a month, the one for each of us to help us keep streaming these movies, gets you access to our Discord server, where we have made a pre-New Year's resolution to get our asses more active and not just hide alone in our lonely caves and not speak to anybody ever.
The resolution.
Because we love you.
Is it time? May I read our lovely, wonderful Patreons? I hope it's I don't time. Sound too much like Squidward right now. We would like to thank our lovely, wonderful Patreons, Logan, Andrew, Sharon, Justin, Evan, Ace, Mara, Raimi the Void, Heartleaf, Ave with Teeth, Ryan, Maddie, Brian, and Brianna. Thank you all so much for listening. And also, we would absolutely keep all of your secrets if you spilled them to us on a plane when you thought that we were dying, but it was actually just turbulence. Rest assured.